Our next speaker is Milt Cottlechuck, and I'm sure some of you noticed Milt scribbling there at the end while he was listening to Amy and Deborah talk, and that's because his talk is a hot-off-the-press talk. You know, it's he's the kind of speaker that does that every time I've heard him speak, and it's one of the exciting parts of getting to hear Milt. So Milt Cottlechuck is a currently senior scientist in maternal and child health at the Center for Child and Adolescent Health Research and Policy at the Mass General Hospital for Children, and he's also a visiting professor of pediatrics at Harvard Medical School. His current research interests focus on MCH life course models and the utilization of the Massachusetts Pregnancy to Early Life Longitudinal Data System. And he is also currently a member of the Department of Health and Human Services Secretary's Advisory Committee on Infant Mortality, which I know we'll be hearing a lot more about in the next few months and probably starting in 2013. So with that, I want to invite Milt up. He's going to be talking about MCH life course and perinatal disparities, new directions for MCH risk, programs and policy, and outcomes research.
Oh, that is a mouthful, right. First of all, thank you very much for having me, and also for everybody showing up at this time of day. You know, I had to just acknowledge for, you know, am I supposed to say, do I have any financial ties?
Absolutely.
Or relationships. I root for the Boston Red Sox, who came in dead last, so I'm afraid to show my face outside, you know. I start all my talks just to remind everybody once again that if we're going to make progress, we need a science, a knowledge base, good strategies, good practice, and we need political will. And obviously we're in a period where a lot of political will is being decided over the next few days. And no matter what we say, all those things are true. In my talk, I just want to just acknowledge that what all my colleagues have said, how hard it is to translate life course into practice. That's really the most difficult of our tasks. But I was asked, although it doesn't say so in my title, to actually talk about research and to talk about future directions for research. And I wanted to target this in, and in the end, I'm really mostly going to talk about interventions. But I do want us to say I am going to talk about research and where we should go with it, looking across time and domains of topics. I want to look at services, and I want to introduce a new model for how to think about the way we offer services, and I want to propose a couple new perinatal outcome measures to look at. I was told to be provocative in another talk, so some of these are my provocative ideas, and then I hope this leads to a really good discussion. So almost everybody knows this is Michael Lu's thing, and the other thing I just want to say, I did not want to give the talk they assigned me, which is, you know, like intro to life course. I'm kind of sick of it. I wanted to do something new. So this is truly a work in progress. I'm not really done, and it's why I'm scribbling so much, because I'm still working out ideas. But we all know Michael Lu's talk. It reminds us that prenatal interventions are not the source of understanding racial disparities, and that we have to look both earlier, look at some of the factors that raise this. I'm going to come back to this particular graph, but this is where we start. And it was sort of my challenge. I'm at a dinner conversation, and someone says to me, your classic, you know, well, if you're the Minister of Health, what would you do about disparities, particularly perinatal? I want to focus my talk on perinatal. That model derives about perinatal, and almost everything else we're talking about isn't about perinatal so much, so I want to look at it for perinatal. So what would I do? You know, I hem and haw, and I say, oh, get rid of poverty, da-da-da-da. But really, practice-wise, I stumble like everybody else. So I wanted to know, given the Lu and Halfen model, you know, where should research and practice actually be directed? What are things we should be doing? And Neil Halfen has got this MCH Life Course Research Network, which some of you probably belong to, and he asked me to write the chapter with some other people on, you know, what should we do for reproductive health? And this is actually sort of my outline and beginning of thinking of what should be in there. It was due, however, 6 weeks ago. And it's my initial ideas, and I'm really open for things. Okay? Hey, so you could organize things by risks, services, outcomes, new analytic approaches. I'm only going to talk about the top three today. And what I wanted to do was to actually look at our metaphors. How do we think about it? One of the most exciting things about life course is that everybody now graphs out their models. We never used to do this. This is like a whole new thing. And I wanted to look at the various models. For whatever reason, I couldn't find the Bronfenbrenner model, the psychosocial. But this is essentially a version of this. Everybody loves this model. The problem is the model doesn't tell us. So when you look at it, then just think, what does it tell us? It doesn't tell us very much about the power of different things, which ones impact each other, and it doesn't tell us anything about interventions. I love it, but it's actually not really that helpful to us. Then we have this one that comes from California. It's widely used, that really tells us to think about the sort of root causes of things. I love this model. It does tell me about root causes, but interestingly enough, it's got some problems. It sort of separates socio-ecological from medical. It artificially makes a distinction, which I think is actually harmful for our work. They have to go together, not be separated. And it also really doesn't quite tell us what to do. It just tells us where the problems lie. Then there's the Jack Schoenkopf from the Center for the Developing Child, which I love because it really does capture well, and Amy Fine had it in her first slide, you know, a picture of how the biology gets into our body, the new advance of our period. And it even says you need stable relations, safe support environments, appropriate nutrition. I think it does a beautiful job for conveying to people what's the central essence of our issue. But as you move farther down the thing, you get to the policy and program levers, and it's a whole list of things. And Jack, since he's not here, I can slur him for a second and just point out, don't quote me that on that. He just says whatever place he goes to give a talk, he just changes the names in the left-hand box, and everybody thinks he's talking right to them because he's got their organization's name on. So again, it just doesn't tell me exactly what to do. Here's a classic early one for early child development. It looks just the same as sort of the Michael Lew and others. Oops, let me get to this. And at least has some of the domains of interventions and has sort of time, but kind of not in any particular order. It's just a random set of things, all of which are good, but not quite there. Oops, sorry, this is okay. Now I want to come back to Michael Lew's thing. I love Michael Lew and Neil Haffen. They're wonderful, my colleagues. And, you know, what does he emphasize in this? Well, he's got risk factors and protective factors, but they're not actually named, okay? I mean, he wasn't trying to do that, but, you know, it gets us the idea that there are these things, that it shapes these curves. It also, it tells us things are important earlier in life, and particularly prenatally, a very important thing. But I would also point out that it doesn't have any agency, and it doesn't actually say you could change things. Like, I would like this curve, I just can't draw it, to have hands, that actually there's an agent who could change those lines. It's not just the programs, the pluses and minuses, but there are other things that you could think about from this graph. And that's sort of how I started thinking about all of this problem. So that's where I'm coming from. So let me start with risks. I'm going to go to services and outcomes. So risk, what the life course tell us, what other people said, there's a wider time range of risk that we could look at. There's a greater breadth of risk that might make a difference in perinatal health. Probably a stronger focus on cumulative risks and protective factors, resiliency, and some greater recognition of the mother-child interdependency, which a couple of you were sort of hinting about. So what I did, I'm writing a paper, so I just listed all the places from a life course perspective on perinatal that we could actually influence things. And I won't bore you with this long list, but every one of these are stages where there is potential for intervention or thought. And I will just tell you, I summarize fast the literature. I don't want to bore you with all of this, but eventually you can read a paper that says, this is where we've studied and this is where we haven't. So we look at intergenerational. There's a lot of really interesting studies. What was the grandmother's low birth weight? What's your low birth weight? Really nice stuff, beautiful technical studies, but very limited views of what intergenerational means. It's sort of like one point in time versus another point in time. Good, you know, but none really tell me enough. The other points I just want to make is that if you look at that graph, it sort of implies that early childhood has got to be really important. How many people in this room ever actually study early childhood factors and their implications for reproductive health? Not really very many. Well, one person does. Okay, good for you. I'm going to ask you later what you've learned. But basically, there are several topics that we're really relatively limited on. I'm doing some work on ART, you know, does it make a difference if you're born by ART, not ART on birth outcomes? I also point out to you that fetal experiences and embryogenic experiences, I'm the one who, you know, I studied prenatal care, and then I showed prenatal was good, then I showed it was bad, and now I'm actually saying, you know, prenatal environments, hey, you know, maybe they're more important than we think. It's like a whole new era. All of a sudden, prenatal worlds becomes really much more important in a life course perspective than we were thinking about. And I also think we tend to do very well. In some areas like delivery experiences, birth outcomes, there's thousands of studies looking at if you were low birth weight, what are predictors and not predictors. But certain domains are understudied. And I just want to highlight the three if we're looking for future research. I do think we need more work on early life experiences. It's a whole domain. If we believe it, you know, we may be making this all up. I don't know. I can't tell because we actually don't have work to show that's important. I think we need to do more work on the prenatal or the uterine environment. I think whether it's the occupational environmental health issues or the nature of what's actually going on in the mother's womb, there's some really creative work people are doing that we could be doing and looking once again in the sort of prenatal area. And I think we do an insufficient amount of research on particularly postnatal maternal health, the interaction of pregnancy and women's health. Those are like our risk areas from time. From breath, I would just say there's a much wider range of breath. Let me not bore you with a really long slide and just sort of say, and I'm going to come to this model in a minute. It's sort of a problem. I'll tell you why I chose these topics for breath. But looking at clinical services, social determinant, maternal family resiliency, stress was sort of what our last speaker was speaking, Debbie Allen was speaking a lot on. And sort of looking, what are the areas that we've studied about characteristics of the range of topics that might influence, not the timing, but the range. And again, I wrote to summarize this all out, and I only want to emphasize one thing so I can get onto the part I'm most interested in chatting with all of you about, is that we've actually studied medical services incredibly. That's all I ever do. Like, you know, prenatal care does this, you know, regionalization, different kind of birthing techniques. We don't tend to do quite as good a job in the MCH world of looking at ties to social services and other services besides the more technical medical services. On social determinants, we do lots of fabulous, there are fabulous studies on social determinants, poverty and its impact on birth outcome. One point in time studies. You measure poverty at one point. You don't do cumulative poverty. I love the weathering work because at least that has the implication of time. But mostly our work is we do a lot of good stuff in it, but not as much depth as we really could in this area. And then maternal family resiliency and responsibility, a topic I'm going to talk to you much more about in a minute. I would say, although we've studied a lot of things like, does the mother drink? Is the mother young? Is the mother old? Is she good? Is she bad? We do a lot of studies like that and its impact on birth outcome. And we think the topic is, as Debbie Allen pushed so nicely, issues of stress, resiliency. But we don't actually measure resiliency. We don't actually think of this as its own topic area. So in addition to a couple time points, that's actually the biggest domain area I think we understudy. So, and then, you know, there's a lot of other special challenges on risk. You know, how do you measure the cumulative nature of it? Paul Wise correctly asked us to think about, like, is risk summative? Is it a threshold phenomenon? Is it punctuated? Does it happen only at certain times that are important? There's a lot of issues about the nature of risk that we actually need to spend some time on because it makes a lot of difference to whether risks are reversible. And are we too deterministic? And I completely agree with Amy Fine, not surprisingly, since we write together a lot. I hadn't heard that point of her talk till today. But, you know, we have to really think about addressing the issue of deterministic and not deterministic aspects of risk and how to really think about it and address it. Otherwise, we're just going to be one more group saying it's too late. And then we have to think about which domains are more powerful. And I think this is the nature, the interactive nature and the duality of maternal child health risks is an area we need to focus more on. And I have some specific examples of it to talk about it a little bit later. Okay. So let's move to practice. This is what I really wanted to talk about. So on one hand, I just want to ask, you know, for life services, for life course services or programs, what would we do different than we're doing today? That's actually what I always ask. I mean, we all know what we're doing. We think these are good things, but are we doing anything different? And if you talk to the pediatric community, which I do a lot of, they already are developmentally focused, so they actually have no problem just slipping into just changing their lingo and saying, now we're life course. You know, we were developmental, now we're life course, and everything's fine. But in the perinatal world, we too can do that pretty easily. You know, we've always known poverty is an important issue, so now it's a life course poverty issue. So if you look at our writings, of which there aren't that many, but I would say the key ideas about life course service assumptions is that there are more time points for intervention. That's a really key thing. We can do interventions at more time points than obviously just when you're pregnant. There are more opportunities and settings for interventions. They're not just narrow clinical interventions. The life course allows us to address social determinants a lot more, to think beyond just clinical care, and policy is kind of an important determinant of thinking about this. And ultimately, we believe that interventions can be effective. We're not nihilist, we're not over-determined. We do think interventions really can make a difference, and that by strengthening protective and decreasing risk factors, we can make a difference. I'm optimistic. The world can be made better. But I have to say, being critical of my own writing and Amy's and others, that's why I didn't say I stole ideas from people by name, that our initial recommendations on life course services are kind of weak. You know, go out and do good things and study them carefully so we can learn lessons. They just didn't tell people what to do. We've been giving talks for years, and everybody says, what do you want to do? So I feel like, and I think that if we didn't give specific suggestions of what to do for interventions, then we're even less good suggestions about how to research it. And I do want to also point out that doing research in changing the real world is really tough. This is not an easy area to do research in. You know, it's not a lab. This is the hardest science, not the easiest science, as I like to tell people. And our first work in thinking about this is, you know, we made a suggestion about continuities. I mean, you haven't actually seen this slide. I added a new, we had four, you know, vertical continuity, sort of making things go well within sort of clinical care or any sector, horizontal linking between different sectors, longitudinal continuity over time, which we've talked about, holistic continuity, recognizing brain and, you know, mind and body and mental health we're all the same. But Tina Chang used this in a paper that she submitted to the MCH Journal that I was in it and reviewed, and I said, so good. I called her up and I said, could I steal that line? And she said, yes. Intergenerational continuity. I think we have to think a little bit about how the generations fit together and how they're continuous, and not be saying, there's babies, and then there's the mothers are good or bad, but we only love babies, to really think about how these ties fit together. And I actually thought that was kind of a nice word. I don't know all of its meaning, but I encourage you to use it. So I've been trying to think about the domains of our intervention. And the domains we really have in our intervention, I thought about this historically. I'm going to go to the picture. I think we have three dimensions to the way we do our three foci of our interventions. When you look historic, I can give you the entire history of reproductive health told from this triangle. But they really have three things, and I want to emphasize. We've mostly emphasized clinical care, and so the social determinants and the life course people have pushed social determinants, but we've made them opposed to each other only, when obviously they link. But there's a third dimension, and that third dimension you could think of as maternal or family resilience. It could be called stress. I thought Debbie Allen really, you know, she was just articulating point after point about this new thing that we're really trying. It's not new. It's an old thing, but we don't think of it as a domain of intervention. It's often the byproduct of our intervention. The number of you who I interview, who I say, why would, if we make this change here, why would it make a difference? You say, people be less stressed. People have more resiliency. They see a direct tie. There's a long-standing history in the MCH field that the mothers are ultimately centrally responsible for the health of their baby. Sometimes it's positive and sometimes it's negative. You know, it's not always a positive interpretation. There's as much blaming as there is resiliency. But those are sort of three domains. And you can characterize any MCH intervention somewhere in this. You could put a dot. You could think about both what we do in any sector, but also how these sectors relate to each other. And I have a lot of little weird graphs that I'm going to just show you to think about it. But, you know, I just wrote out a list of the kind of things we're doing that are in the clinical and service intervention. In fact, much of the March of Dimes activities were in this sector, but not exclusively. A lot of the 39-week activities were kind of clinical in focus. Very important, but they're in that sector, and that's a sector we work a lot on. The social determinants. So I'm working with like the Best Baby Zones and some other groups that are that think social determinants are the answer. But then I say, so what are the interventions? We all know it would be great if we got rid of bad things, but what are the things we do? Well, here's some of the kinds of things that people might advocate for that are actually practical things in a campaign that said, I'm not interested, for this moment, I'm not interested in clinical activities. I just want to change the world. Here's some ways of changing the world. You know, paid maternity leave, these directly address income. You know, institutional racism, Medicaid reform is about services, Best Baby Zone, zonal approaches, changing the environment people live in, father employment, physical, nutritional resources, environmental, you know, enhancements, strengthen community capacity, build churches. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do in that sector. Interestingly enough, it was harder to write out all the interventions we do in the maternal resiliency sector, but we do actually have a fair number. When you start thinking about it conceptually, I'm just trying, it's a weird conception. Don't even worry about risk. Just think of what we do. Well, sexuality education. You train people about sexuality. That affects them for their lives. That's not a clinical. Yeah, and so you've got sexuality education, teen parenting education support. Not how many teens graduated. That's a good outcome measure. But what did the schools do to help keep teens in the school? That's actually the intervention. You know, maternal stress reduction initiatives, yoga. A lot of people are into yoga. It's a good thing. A lot of people train moms while they're pregnant. Reduce stress. It works. Life experience resiliency, kind of low-level working with the hardships of daily life. Parenting support groups. Maternal empowerment initiatives we have in a couple of other things. Okay. But I do want to point out that we're also negative. Incarcerate pregnant, drug-using women during pregnancy. This could go either way. It's not actually always guaranteed it's positive. We have a lot of really negative views about bad moms, bad behaviors, not good. So I just want to point out to you that every sector has room for improvements and things. And particularly the top sector, I just want to note, if you start reading the literature, you realize how much stuff is directed at good versus bad moms and things that we can do to improve capacity and resiliency that are actual programs and also worthy of some real study, direct study. And you can measure whether a program's on these lines. Where they do they overlap somehow? I just want to point out, since I see Sharon's in the back and I promised her I would say this, I got your 1 minute warning and I'll stop in a second. But just to say, centering pregnancy, go back to this. We already do prenatal care in one corner, but centering parency is actually about what's in the top left, the top of the thing. It actually addresses two topics and not one topic, and that's actually why it's more powerful than just prenatal care. It has a focus on both, and we can name lots of different interventions that move along those lines, and my point ultimately, not only just interventions, but programs that cut and cross and thing. And in fact, that's sort of one of my main points. We need multi-sectoral interventions. We have to be thoughtful about them. There's sort of like a sweet spot in the middle that kind of captures all of them. WIC fits that. And you can hope that over time you find things that sort of address campaigns that have to address all three sectors. Okay, I'm going to skip all these things. There's time dimensions. Boys and girls clubs, I never thought about them, and all of a sudden I thought, hey, maybe they're more effective than we think. I don't think anybody's ever done a study of if you were a member of a boys' club or a girls' club growing up, do you have better birth outcomes? I don't know. And would it reduce disparities? The central topic that I was interested in. Anyway, there's a lot of research topics that go within that, and I think I'm going to skip all the rest of things and quickly end and just say that, you know, I want to reframe. I want us to think about the way we do services and to think, I'm going to be very technical for 1 second, is just, could we measure when we do a program, can we measure each of the ways a program affects these other domains? So that you can almost like put a vector on every intervention we do. So we can have a way of graphing whether one program is slightly more effective than another. Does it make that gap wider or smaller between things? But to really start thinking systematically about the nature of interventions. And I do think they fall in this sort of triangle of interventions. And it really says we've been weakest at thinking the top part, this third part that many of us actually believe includes those other parts, but to do more work in that area. So I'll stop on that. That was the sort of quick research. I had some outcome measures too, but we'll get to them at some other point. Thank you.